What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Periodic Table. This is the weekly science news show where, well, we break down the hottest science news stories of the week. And are we experts most of the time? No, we're not, but that's okay because this is one big virtual science classroom and we are all here to learn together. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You might know me as a host formerly over AfterBuzz TV or the Popcorn Talk Network. You might also know me from the movie Trivia Schmodown, but what you might not know is that I'm also a mechanical engineer and I have a passion and a love for science and science communication and technology and all that fun stuff. And I want to try to share that love with the world. And here today, I have a great person to share that love with today. You might know him also. I always forget to pull up the right documents here. You might know him also as a broadcaster, comedian, author of Why We Love Star Wars. He is the co-founder of the Good People Association and co-creator of the Force Center podcast. He's done a lot of great things. It is Ken Knapsack. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Brandon. I absolutely, my whole career has been pulling up the wrong papers. So don't worry, my friend, you're doing well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anyway, good or bad that I could follow in your footsteps, I know I'm doing the right thing.
I'll tell you when you're going wrong and when to turn around because I've already made this mistake. No, happy to be here. And I was absolutely aware of your engineer side, engineer life, and always been impressed by that. So happy to hang out with you here. I'm definitely not an expert, man, but happy to learn with you and from you.
Thanks. I appreciate that. We have a great show for you all here today. We're going to talk about factory grown food and why it isn't science fiction anymore. And we're also going to talk about pumpkin spice. It really does give you that warm and fuzzies, and there's science to why that works. And we're going to talk about that one. I think that's a fun story. And we have a special segment for you all here today. I'm calling it 5 minutes with Ken, and I'm just going to ask Ken some questions, spark up some fun conversation. We're just going to both get to know each other a little better, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get into all of that, let's jump up to our number one story here this week, and it is all about factory-grown food. And this article, guys, is coming from Bloomberg. As always, the links to all of the articles are in the description down below if you want to check them out for yourself and read a little more on these great topics. But veggies, guys, grown in a warehouse without sun or soil will actually possibly help protect our food supply from climate change and other disruptions. It's called vertical farming, and it's a system of growing food, like I said, without the soil or the sun. And it has thrived in mainly science fiction films. I'm sure we've all seen movies. We've seen, I can remember immediately, the TV show The Expanse on their spaceship on the Rocinante. For all you sci-fi nerds out there, you can see the plants growing on like the side of the walls in the kitchen, and you know, it seems like a great way to create food in places where maybe food doesn't want to grow. And now it's looking like it's becoming more of a reality. And this new kind of farming requires more energy and technology compared to traditional agriculture. It's all about growing plants stacked in metal trays, their roots dangling in midair as they're fed a nutrient-rich mist, which I think is pretty cool. And LED lights replace sunlight. And of course, they also have cameras and sensors continually monitoring these plants and gathering all these data points to see how these plants grow and how they could possibly grow faster. And we're going to get into that in a little bit, but there's a lot to unravel. But before I go down a rabbit hole myself, I want to throw it over to you, Ken. What was your overall impressions reading this article? Did you find this particularly interesting? Did anything stick out to you as particularly fascinating?
Yeah, I'll start with the mist. Let's jump to, I don't want to bury the headline, because my first thought was, can I just take in this mist? And what do I start growing? Can I grow my hair back? Hey, I think the future is going to help solve my hair problem. But no, I was really excited, Brandon, by this, because we're definitely not here to downplay or just kind of be apathetic towards any kind of talk of climate change and what we see in the world, right? Getting that out there. But I've always had in the back of my head this hope that, you know, we are, relatively speaking, maybe some of us are smart, and necessity being the mother of invention. I've, in the back of my head, I'm like, I absolutely believe we can take the right steps and there's things we can do now. But I actually love to choose to have hope for the future. And something like this is that hope, where something that I, in my, hey, let's pour a drink and talk Star Wars brain, can't comprehend something like this. To see it, it does spark a little bit of hope. There's questions behind it. You mentioned the use of energy and this and that. Yeah, some conversations to have, I'm sure. But broccoli grown from a mist, I love reading that.
Yeah, it is hopeful. It is optimistic, like you mentioned, Ken. And I do hope that maybe one day it can lead to just a spray where you can grow your hair back if you know you feel so inclined. But I think you look great as you do.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, it is really interesting, and I love that your mind immediately goes to that. You know, it's a funny thing to say, but I mean, that's one of the great things about reading these kind of scientific articles, is it does get you thinking of the possibilities of like, oh, it mentioned this type of technology here. Like, I wonder how far they can push that. And right. That's the exact kind of thinking that I think a lot of these scientists and engineers that come up with these great inventions and these great ideas, that they're thinking that same way. So I think we're on the same wavelength with the smart people behind the scenes, I feel like. So that gives me hope personally.
That's good. If you got hope as an engineer, I definitely believe in hope. But yeah, look, like I said, we should not have apathy towards our current position and any kind of future position, right? These are people trying to figure stuff out. And I was reading part of the article. I'm not going to lie, Brandon. Like, it was like, this company might be going public. In the back of my head, you're like, oh, okay, let me start investing. Let me grab my Stash app and see. And then your brain starts going that way, and it starts going in the realistic kind of looking at this article. But just the simple idea that some folks are thinking about different ways to do things, that's what always has driven science, right? And that's it's just fun to see. It's always in action, even if you're not thinking about it or you're not aware of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I also admittedly had that same thought. I try to read this article like from a most objective scientific point of view as possible, but I'm like, oh, it does say that they're anticipated to grow in the next decade.
Look, we have to own the good, we have to own the bad. And I don't necessarily think it's inherently bad buying stocks in a company going public, but it's just like, it's so funny that I'm just like, ooh, space broccoli. Oh, but real stocks. It is what it is. But at least the space broccoli might exist.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it says here in the article that vertical farming also relies on urban real estate, more expensive than rural farmland, which means that right now their products are currently selling for about $2 an ounce, which they say is what you would consider luxury goods that you could hardly feed the world with. So there's a lot of room to grow in terms of making this food more affordable to produce for everyone, because the goal is to put these farms in regions that have limited water supply and land that's not potent for farming. So, you know, one thing I really appreciated how this article kind of goes into like the nitty gritties of that, and saying that Aeroponic Farms, which is the company that is right now behind a lot of this vertical farming, they use up to 95% less water than in-field vegetable production and grow food 30 to 40% faster. They use as little as 0.3% of the land of a field farmer, so that more food can be grown inside the space of a soccer goal net than can be grown across an entire soccer field, which I thought was a really interesting way to put that, like a visual representation of growing more with less.
Yeah, that's which would be important, especially in urban areas. Yeah, and you're touching on a thing. We're joking about the stock stuff there, which is, again, a real conversation to have. But, I'm someone who in my house here, Grace and I, Grace is full plant-based vegan, and I've committed to a lot of that. I still reserve the right to go to a steakhouse and have a steak, all those kind of things. But I do it for a lot of reasons. Health, there's issues behind it for the betterment of our world, right? But then you go to the store and you grab all these tasty plant-based foods that they've made drastic, wonderful improvements on the taste from even just 5 years ago when I tried this before. And then I get to the checkout line and I'm like, oh, I can't keep this up. I got to go grab $2 and go to McDonald's. And you can see some of the bigger problems at play. And hopefully the people behind Space Broccoli, as we've now officially dubbed it here, right, Brandon? as their power grows, we have to hope people use the right use power for the right reasons, I suppose, to actually truly help people.
Yeah, definitely. I love the dubbing that term space broccoli. I think it fits. It makes it interesting. We should stick with it. But
there's space in front of anything and it sounds cool and important.
Exactly. I'm on board with that 100%. But they also mentioned in this article the plants growing without herbicides and fungicides and insecticides, and how that can affect also the health of people consuming these products down the line. But another thing that I thought was really interesting was, I did mention earlier these cameras and sensors that they were using to monitor these plants. And they've actually driven these innovations where the company has seen a 23% increase in its yield per square foot of indoor growing space in the past year alone, and has sped the growth cycle for baby leaf greens from 20 to 14 days compared to 4 to 6 weeks in the field. And they do this by changing the variables when it comes to maybe the amount of sunlight these plants are getting, the amount of moisture they're getting, the amount of nutrients, oxygen, CO2, what the temperature is in the room. They're constantly adjusting all of these things to just get these plants to grow faster, safer, and just, you know, better overall. Yeah. To possibly do some good, I think, at the end of the day, is what we're going for here.
What I love what you're saying is, because a lot of those cameras and sensors, it's like cameras aren't just for spying on your neighbors with your Ring camera anymore. And it's they're putting them all to good use here, right?
Yeah, it's not just about spying on your neighbors, it's about spying on your plants too. because I think we've all seen The Happening. We don't want that happening.
Well, yeah, this broccoli has no AI components yet that we're aware of, right? I read the piece, I wrote down some notes, but I did not see AI emerging from broccoli, where space broccoli will rule us all.
No, definitely not. But this actually kind of ties into a story, now that I'm thinking about it, that we covered on this show like maybe a couple months ago, about spinach being able to send signals to a computer to alert you of maybe changes in atmospheric conditions and climate conditions to potentially warn people about, you know, impending natural disasters or what have you. So maybe that AI component isn't as far away as we think.
Not familiar with this spinach you speak of, which will one day try to rule us all, but I, much like humans, I have to hope the spinach uses its power for good. And it seems like I no longer have to look at my chihuahua to predict earthquakes. I can ask the spinach. That's great, though. This is good.
Exactly. So, guys, if you're interested in that story, go and check it out. It's on the podcast feed. It's on the YouTube feed. Really interesting story about spinach sending emails. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about the space broccoli. And it's I think, like we talked about, really cool story. Before we move on to our next one, Ken, I just want to give you the opportunity to speak on anything regarding said space broccoli that maybe we haven't covered.
No, I love that. Great article. Like I said, I'm not it's not something flipping for me. Just this idea of there's people out there trying to find better ways forward and what we can do with that power and that technology. And today it's space broccoli and space water chestnuts, I think I saw in the article as well. And tomorrow it's something better. And again, you just have to carry that hope into mankind, which is sometimes tough about who are the hawks that are going to come in and try to profit off it. Apparently me with my Stash app buying stock, but you know, that's just realities. But I love it. And in this day and age where you look out your window and you can be just overwhelmed and feel that doom of the future, it's nice to see things like this and just kind of remind yourself that, hey, space broccoli is coming and maybe solutions are out there if we seek them.
Yeah. Well put. So yeah, guys, go out, check that story furthermore if you want to maybe, you know, try to invest in it like us, or if you just want to learn more about the science, it's out there for you. But
cut to like 2 years from now, me and Brandon sitting on our space broccoli thrones, just saying the broccoli has ruled the world. Yeah.
be like, thanks for having me on the show, Brandon. It really paid off.
Really paid off. I got my space broccoli crypto cash. Yeah. We'll be better. We'll be responsible people. I trust Brandon and I'll follow his lead.
I believe that. I believe in you as well, Ken. Thank you. But you know, something that also, aside from space broccoli cash giving you the warm and fuzzies, pumpkin spice also gives you the warm and fuzzies. As I think we all know, you know, we're all aware of the pumpkin spice crazes out there, and there's apparently the science why. Which I'm excited to get into. But before we do, I just want to thank everybody watching the show at home right now. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that like button, leave a comment down below if you want to talk investments with me and Ken, or maybe if you just want to talk about, you know, the science, I suppose, of anything that we're talking about here today. Let's get a conversation going. That's what this is all about. And hit that subscribe button, notification bell, so you don't miss a thing. And if you're listening on audio podcast platform, please subscribe to the feed, leave a positive rating. If you can, a positive review, it really helps out this show a lot. And I'm really trying to push the podcast thing a little bit more, just to see where that goes. I think, you know, it's a little thing. I think you could probably speak on this, Ken. The podcast platform could be a little bit better for growing a show than YouTube and Twitch and all those things intend to go.
Who knew? Turns out these new things called podcasts have a future. which, you know, you've been around this digital space for a while now, and I launched mine in 2013, but even then they were already old by that point. But it's fascinating because it is just the basic human talks, human listens. And I love how that works. It's why I love radio. It's where I started. It's the best format. And you should do a show on the science of trying to grow YouTube and Twitch channels. I want to know the numbers because they ain't good all the time. They ain't
good. No, they're not. That'd be tricky. I think I would need to find a certain level of success myself before I think branching.
I'll tell you what. It is easier to understand the concept of space broccoli than YouTube algorithms. That's a fact.
Very, very well put. So guys, please support the show in any way you can. Really appreciate it. But it is that fall time of year. And like I said, we are talking about pumpkin spice. It makes you happy. Does it make you happy, Ken? Are you a pumpkin spice man?
So no. But this is it's a great article because I went to this article. It's like, man, you know, here I'm going to have to come on Brandon's show and prove that I'm truly the world's most grumpiest guy because I don't have pumpkin spice and it doesn't make me happy. But if you read the article, it goes into the science of just almost any flavor, right? And what you think you're smelling is connecting to memory. I am an eggnog fiend. So when the eggnog lattes come out like a month after the pumpkin spice ones, that's when I get happy. So I think the science checks out and connects there. And that's why I was fully on board with this article.
Now you're going to have to let me know, Ken, does eggnog have similar spices in it to the pumpkin spice latte craze and all that? Anything pumpkin spice?
Yeah, I think especially reading that article talking about, hey, you might not be able to actually tell that there isn't a difference between pumpkin spice and maybe a gingerbread cinnamon latte or whatever it said there. I think it's relatively similar in terms of coffee form, in terms of walking into a corporate chain coffee restaurant and asking for an eggnog latte. It's probably relatively the same.
Yeah, that was kind of like where I'm getting at. I thought that was a really interesting point in this article to say, like, we don't do such a good of a job as human beings articulating the differences between all these things that we love that share similar different blends of spices. Mm-hmm. Can you tell the difference between a gingerbread latte and a pumpkin spice latte if they didn't put the label on it?
Right.
I don't know. I thought that was really interesting about specifically the label that's on it is what kind of triggers that sense of happiness with people.
Look, I'm fascinated by this on, you know, I'll make jokes of myself not being a smart cat, but I just, you know, I went, whereas you probably in high school took a chemistry class and were like, hey, this interests me. I learned how to play poker in my chemistry class in my junior year. So I go, and you're also, you host, you're creative, you do this. So cheers to you. But I'm fascinated with just kind of the science of emotions and being a music fan. And I have a music show now and started my current radio. Like I'm fascinated with how a song will connect to that part of your brain and how they literally will. Maybe I've heard, you know, scientists will press on a brain part of the brain and a song comes out of the subject's mouth. And I'm fascinated by that kind of stuff. And I think it ties to this brand. And so I'm excited because in reading this article, I'm like, I don't like pumpkin spice. But man, the when I think of eggnog lattes, I think of holding it at my old day job on a cold, rainy day, which is a scenario that I love. And that's what I think of more than the taste. And so all tracks, it all connects. What a powerful thing this brain is.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. The article goes into triggering these emotions and memories. Like you just said, it's a nostalgia thing. Like when you have a pumpkin spice latte in your hand, or in your case, like a gingerbread or eggnog, if you will, it tells you what time of year it is. It tells you what you should be feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It just kind of like gives you like that cozy feeling of like, okay, like it's fall and it's, you know, summer's almost over, but the weather's getting a little cooler. We're moving into the holiday season. You know, maybe you're someone who really enjoys Halloween. So the Halloween holiday comes around and you're all of a sudden you're smelling these scents of pumpkin spice and it's making you excited for, you know, Halloween and, you know, going to Halloween Horror Nights and watching scary movies with your friends and all that stuff. It's a really, really powerful thing.
So true. Just today, Grace and I were in our local coffee shop and they were selling pumpkin spice candles. And she was like, you know, got to get one, and happy to bring that candle home, because then she being a Halloween fan, it's just all of it kind of rolls together, like you just said so perfectly. And there you go. Again, the science of emotions all wrapped up in what we think is a candle that smells like spiced pumpkin. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. It's and the article also goes into a little bit how like the brain like works more specifically about, it's kind of like filling in these gaps depending on all of your senses, what you're seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting. And if maybe you're getting a smell and a taste, but you're not like hearing, you know, or seeing a label like this is pumpkin spice, kind of like we talked about, like your brain kind of fills in these gaps and it like constructs your own perception of the world. Which I think is really fascinating. I actually found myself having a similar moment like a couple weeks back. We had just gotten this maple flavored coffee from Trader Joe's that I never had before. So there's no reason why I should be nostalgic for it.
Right. But
there was just something about like this, the smell of the coffee, the taste of the coffee that was super nostalgic. I was drinking it out of a mug that I have that I used to drink out of a lot couple of years ago when I lived in a different apartment and a different city, and it kind of like brought me back to that apartment for a second, if that makes any sense.
Completely. It's no, totally makes sense, because again, going back to the music side, I recently uncovered in my storage shed like 50 mixed CDs I had made myself between like 2000 and 2005, and I was like, oh great, awesome, I know all the songs, I love the songs. But I put the CDs back in my car, because I still have a CD player in my car, it's that old. And man, I gotta tell you, not only did I remember every song coming up next on the playlist, I was back in where I was in that time, which also is not necessarily always a great thing, because as someone who suffers from depression or something like that, you hear a song and I'm like, oh, I used to love listening to that song, driving around in circles, crying myself to sleep. And your brain starts to go back there. And like you said in that article, they talk about the brain starts filling in some gaps. It's like the brain almost wants to connect to that weird, oh, remember that song? You used to cry about that person with that song. Let's go back to there. And so it's the other side of the pumpkin spice fun, I guess. But again, love all that, and good and bad, just love the science of it.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. And it, you know, it even mentions here that not just smelling or tasting the pumpkin spice, but just reading the words pumpkin spice triggers that same part of the brain as actually, you know, smelling the aroma and tasting. Yeah. If you're like a pumpkin spice latte person or something,
yeah,
just reading the words triggers that same part of the brain. So, you know, you talk about like music, maybe just like seeing an album cover probably triggers that exact same feeling as actually hearing the song, you know, sometimes. Yeah.
What a wonderful built-in marketing plan these coffee shops have with their pumpkin spice lattes, because that's all they have to do is just put a billboard with that up and people are just going to start flocking to their locations like happy Halloween zombies.
For sure. And the article even mentions that's kind of why they don't sell pumpkin spice things year round, because we wouldn't have such powerful memories associated with that taste and that smell and everything about it, and we would probably like get bored of it after a while if you could have it every single day.
Look, I'd love an article on the science of the McRib while we're at it. Like the most famous blank is back kind of marketing thing, right? Everyone loves making a reference to the McRib, but there's got to be something similar to that, because it ain't great, but people are going to be like turning right into the Golden Arches to get that food, and it's probably the same thing.
I think I actually read the other day that the McRib is actually coming back. So it's
always on the verge of coming back.
So get yourself a McRib, get yourself a pumpkin spice latte, and just like nostalgia overload.
And turn on some 2002 rock radio hits in my car, and there you go. Just go all over the map emotionally.
There you have it. I don't think you can go wrong. You can't have a bad day. Just use the science. If you're having a rough day, know the science of what makes you happy. And if it's putting on your favorite song, if it's drinking your favorite pumpkin spice beverage, or eating a McRib.
Yeah. Look, hey, you know, this is probably a deeper conversation, but you just stumbled onto something wonderful there. Stumbled. You took us there as like a good host, but like, that's the science of the happy, and knowing that and knowing some of the things are some of the tools we all can have. And that's why I don't, you know, I'll make a joke about it. I always say my whole life is a cheat day when it comes to food, but like, that's kind of part of it. Little food company, companionship, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Little food counseling, little shopping therapy, all those kind of things are little tiny tools in our mental health welfare fight, I think.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I'm definitely someone who can rely on food as a crutch, maybe a little too much sometimes.
It's certainly a danger. Certainly. Look at me. They know me at my Subway. They're like, again, I'm like, yes, veggie delight. So I get you. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I find myself I think my biggest guilty pleasure is when I'm in like having a really rough day. I hit up either like a Carl's Jr. or a Burger King or something. I just like, give me like a not great fast food cheeseburger, bacon cheeseburger. That's what I need when I'm like feeling really down for whatever reason. That's it.
Yeah. Well, and beyond that, the science of food happy, it's sometimes the place. I can make a run through the Golden Arches and get a large fry or whatever I get with it, but I don't take it home and eat it. There's something about the comfort of eating it in my car fast so no one catches me. That just makes me feel like I'm even getting away with something. And I feel better for that. So there you go. It's on many levels.
I'm exactly the same. It never makes it home. The food never makes it home.
It's not designed, Brandon, to go home.
I think I've driven a quarter mile once and it did not make it home.
I respect you, sir. I respect that.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, I think we have a bit in common, which is good, you know.
Yeah. Repressed food issues, I guess, apparently, which again, we're joking, but yeah, always in moderation, always careful. But I think I allow myself, Brandon, I'm okay with that. If it's a bad day and I want to go get 6 tacos at Del Taco, we're not going to worry about that tomorrow. We're going to worry about right then and there and take that little burst of happiness and run with it.
For sure. Every once in a while, it's perfectly okay just to have like a huge cheat day with food, or maybe if you're someone who just likes staying home and like watching movies, if that's like your thing. I like to do both at the same time personally.
It's a good thing.
But I think it's always good for like just like mental health related. If you take a day sometimes, you know, like everything, things could wait.
Yeah. We beat ourselves up for that. You know, where, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Yeah, fine. Whatever. Tomorrow you won't. Today you will, and get that pumpkin spice latte. This article, just print this article out and just keep it in your, and just, this makes me happy. It's a good thing. And I'm going to be okay with it.
Definitely. And maybe I could even like try playing around like with the science of it, tricking my brain. Like maybe if I just like look at a Burger King sign, it might trigger that same emotional response a little bit.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
That's maybe wishful thinking, but.
Yeah, might be, but worth a shot.
Worth a shot. All right, guys. Yeah, give it a shot. This started out as just why pumpkin spice makes you happy, and the science was pretty cool. But I think this is where the science can be applied, like we kind of talked about, to have a good understanding of yourself and the science of what makes you happy, I think could be a powerful tool in your day-to-day life, because hey, we all struggle, so
we all do.
But great stories here today, so really enjoy talking to you about them, Ken. But we're not done yet. We do have a special segment for you all here today that, of course, I'm calling 5 minutes with Ken. It might go 5 minutes, who knows. I just, eyeballing it. I don't know.
Sounds like you and I are about to go make out in a closet. I'm totally fine with this, but 5 minutes, let's spin that bottle and see what happens. Hey,
anything that gets the clicks, okay? A little bit of clickbait, nothing too crazy.
All right. Dang. All right.
Whatever gets the views. But I do have some like question prompts here just to like kind of like get to know you a little bit, maybe like talk about your own experiences with science, maybe growing up. Who knows what rabbit hole we'll go down. But first, I want to ask you, Ken, what was your favorite subject growing up in school?
It was definitely, not counting something like drama. I was in junior high, was, in the drama department, and I wasn't in high school till later, but that, and then for a while, math was, I thought for a second, I was going to be maybe pursue a career as a baseball statistician, because I thought that might be the closest I could get to the field based on the athletic skills I was not blessed with on a baseball diamond, despite having a great love of that game. And after about 9th, 10th grade, some stuff, I'm one of those classic cases of school didn't motivate me. Not saying that school's fault, it's all on me. I'm one of those ones that just like was on the 4-year college plan, and then I just kind of fell off of that. And then I ended up in a radio career, and this is not the great path forward. I'm just, telling all of you that, what journey was. So I'll answer officially, like English writing. That definitely was something that was where I could express myself, and I had a degree of success.
Do you think that, you know, that being your favorite subject with English and writing, has that had any impact on, you know, our trajectory on your career now as like a broadcaster and like a writer and an author and all that?
Well, yeah, it did. It I had some great teachers in 9th and 10th grade, particularly a teacher named Greg Denaik, who soon passed away passed away after I graduated high school. I can't remember the dates. Now, when you get old, Brandon, when you get really old like me, you start trying to remember every specific date for no apparent reason. Another teacher, Kathy Forenza, was my 10th grade English teacher. And she was very encouraging of my writings. And then I had an art teacher, John Olacek, who I was had 11th grade. And then I was his teacher's aide in senior year. And they were just really like, not in the back, they didn't encourage me within the, hey, do good in school. Clearly they did and all that kind of stuff. But they were kind of like, hey, you got something you can turn into something later on in life. And here's how to focus on that. And here's what you need to do. And that kind of helped translate into what I do now, just being creative, not necessarily just writing, but just being confident to share my voice in any form. They were instrumental in that. My drama teacher later on was and Shakespeare teacher in high school, Billy Houck, who just recently retired from teaching, and my drama teachers in junior high, Mike Lebo and his wife, Cindy Cray Lebo, it wasn't just about, oh, you're really good, you're doing good within this school system. They're like, you've got something. It's not talent, like that kind of thing, but you're communicating your voice well through these creative endeavors. Keep pursuing that. And that kind of bit of confidence, sometimes I wish I could hold on to it tighter, like we all do in this creative field, but that's kind of what spurred me forward in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely great. Do you think that there is, obviously, you know, having teachers growing up that kind of encouraged you to pursue the, you know, the parts of your education that you were very like skilled at, you know, that, you know, the reading and the writing and everything and how that's led to where you are today. Do you think that how important is that, do you think, to like a young kid in school who, you know, maybe doesn't know, like, obviously when you're a young kid in school, you shouldn't know what the heck you want to do when you grow up, but yeah, you know, the importance of having like good, positive mentors to kind of push you in a direction where like, hey, you're really good at reading, writing, you're really good at mathematics. Here's some directions you might want to look into as you get older.
Yeah, I think it's so tremendously important, just sometimes in the nuts and bolts thing. And that one teacher I mentioned, Mr. Denaik, he had talked to my mom and dad and just like, hey, you know, writing professionally ain't easy. Here's some things you might need to do to start. And, you know, my career went a little differently and I moved to LA to do more comedy and stuff. But yeah, that was valuable of just getting you thinking about that stuff too. But just also having someone, you know, that even when things are a little hard, like writing always, I'm not a perfect writer by any means, but like writing always kind of came easy, but there's maybe some other things that were a little harder for me to do creatively. And when a teacher or a coach can really help you break, hey, this is not working and here's how you make it better. I always think that's even more valuable. And as a baseball coach, I used to love doing that. You have some super talented kids who are just born with great abilities. But I remember coming out to a ballpark 45 minutes before the game with one kid and just working on his swing. And that night he got his first hit. And the look on his face when he got the first base, this 11-year-old kid just looking at me like, wow. And just the joy. And it was like, yeah, you did that. You succeeded because you saw an area where you were struggling and we went and worked on it. And we approached it with calm and confidence. And I think that was what a lot of those teachers gave to me early on. It wasn't just like affirming that I was good at something. It was like, hey, you got something, but you're not there yet. Let's see how we move it forward. I think that is tremendously valuable.
Yeah, definitely. I've had, you know, similar experiences growing up that affected me in a positive way. And yes, like even with baseball, I also love baseball and I played baseball in high school and I didn't really start playing baseball until my freshman year of high school. And so there was a lot of work that I had to put in. And I think it was an important thing to have coaches that encouraged me to continue to work on the things that I needed to work on. And then, of course, there was the academic side of things for me, obviously, you know, working as an engineer today, I was really good at math growing up. So I was always wondering, you know, like, what can I do in the world of mathematics that, you know, is beneficial. And it wasn't until like high school when I took physics where I was like, wait, you can do math in science? I didn't know that.
See? And there you go. And in my chemistry class, I'm like, wait, you doubled down on an 11. Awesome. Okay, good. Got it.
But no, Ken, I think, you know, you talk about, you know, being a good writer, and obviously you're the author of the, this great book, Why We Love Star Wars, which as a Star Wars fan myself, I loved, I listened to the audiobook. I particularly love it when authors read their own audiobooks, and I think you did an absolutely great job.
Thanks. I've told on other shows, but I'll tell you, here, I had to audition for that. They weren't going to let me do that. In fact, our, my friend Alicia Malone, I don't know if you know Alicia, but she wrote two books for the same company, and they would not let her read the books. So I had an audition, and it was a lot of fun. Number one, I got to correct some little mistakes that made it through the final printing of my book. But two, I'm a better speech writer than I think an essay writer, if that makes sense. And so it was fun to just actually communicate the book as I envisioned it in this weird head of mine.
Yeah, for me, there's always that great, like, personal connection with the author. When you know that they're reading their own works, it kind of takes me out of it sometimes. As someone, I go on, like, I've used to, like, drive far distances to school and far distances to work. And, like, being able to throw on an audiobook every once in a while is really nice. And, you know, listening to someone who's not the author, sometimes it pulls me out of it. But I think I'm glad you won out on the audition and you crushed it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Because it did add that little bit of personal touch for me that I appreciated. Yeah. And I think, you know, just from my own personal experiences, I've had a difficult time being someone who can articulate their thoughts. I even struggle with it on this show a lot sometimes, but I've gotten a lot better at it and I've worked at it, because obviously it's something you need to do well if you're going to be a host or like a radio personality or you know, a YouTube personality or what have you. And so it's something that I did to help myself articulate my thoughts better in front of a microphone is, you know, writing stuff down, writing movie reviews as a little bit of a hobby for a while. And so I think I want to know, do you attribute your writing to your success as a broadcaster? Has being a good writer helped you better articulate your thoughts on air?
It going back to the beginning, yes. It's funny, you're catching me in an interesting point in my career where I do more shows than I used to that are completely written out, which was never something I'd done before. And yeah, look, a broadcaster's got to be able to open up a mic and kind of go to town, so to speak. And that came from being able to write and communicate and just, you know, I mentioned earlier, like school wasn't a great motivator. I was, and I remember reading an article about this and it made me feel good like 20 years later. I was so good at writing that I could do the essay that was the assignment an hour before school started and get an A+. And so therefore I just, instead of using that to move me forward, I just kind of got lazy a little bit, which kind of can sometimes happen for those people. Similar to, like, if you're just great at hitting a baseball, you might not work at it as hard as the kid who's like really wants to, but just can't do it as well. So that kind of knowing that I could just have some thoughts and communicate and put it down made me start broadcasting and all that kind of stuff. But last couple of years, I have found, I have this new music show I do, Pop Rock and Radio, and every word I write, almost every word I say is almost written out, because I just want to have it in front of me and be able to communicate that. So I think a couple of years ago, I would have been like, I don't write one word, and you shouldn't write one word and everything, but that's not true even for me, and it's definitely not true for everyone. I think having that through line, the skeleton of what you want to say, is such a, can be an important thing. And sometimes you might go off the trail and find a good vein of things you want to say, and having the ability to do it without a script or anything is probably the ultimate goal. But I've just had a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun, Brandon, just taking it back to the written word, and how can that be the main point of my communication? Then my voice will carry me the rest of the way. If that makes any of that makes sense, I don't know. I'm just kind of rambling, but you're finding me at a very weird time, at a good time for this conversation, where combining the ability to broadcast and the ability to write, finally, maybe for the first time in years.
Yeah, no, I think it does make sense. And I think, you know, you have succeeded in that very well. And I really appreciate you, like, taking the time to answer all that, because for me, like I said, it can be something that I struggle with as well. And, you know, a big point of this show is science communication. And there's so many different ways to communicate and communicate effectively. And I just love being able to pick your brain on it, because I think it's just, you have a lot to offer in terms of like not only helping me with this show, but helping listeners at home, you know, in their day-to-day lives and their career pursuits. Yeah. And I think it's great.
Yeah, no, hey, if anything I can say that can help others, you know, and eventually you might get to where you want to go. If you know, you say you as a mechanical engineer who has this, you know, expertise and passion for science, and people start bring you on other shows because that's what you are, and you can do, you know, you become that expert that you see on, you know, news shows or podcasts, you're going to get to where you want to go. But in terms of just talking and spitting it all out. But I think for you to be like, hey, this is how I'm going to work and I'm going to grow from here, I think you will only continue to grow those. And this has been a wonderful experience. You're a wonderful host here. So hopefully anything I say out of this dumb mouth that messes up more than it succeeds can help others.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I do want to, you know, bring it back a little bit more to the science of it all. I wanted to ask you also, what films in your life have potentially sparked any scientific interest? Is there any movies that you watched as a kid or an adult that like maybe like made you think more about a scientific field of study that you weren't hyper aware of prior to watching the film?
Yes and no. And here's where it is. And as anyone knows, and we've talked about it, Star Wars, and you can see the pictures hanging behind me, big Star Wars fan. And I've always said Star Wars is fantasy more than sci-fi. Doesn't mean it doesn't have elements of sci-fi. Doesn't have science in it. But it's fantasy, right? It's a myth. It's a modern fairy tale. And I grew up appreciating Star Trek, but not loving it. And some of it was the science of it, which is not to downplay it. It's just, I didn't gravitate towards it. It's always on the Star Wars side. But because of that, and I grew up, you know, born in 76, grew up in the 80s. I grew up in the space shuttle era. I loved, and it's so funny, it's tragic because it was released after the Challenger explosion, which was big in my life. I remember that's one of the first big things I remember experiencing in my life. But the movie Space Camp. Leah Thompson, Joaquin Phoenix, Kelly Preston, Kate Capshaw was in this wonderful, wonderful film in 1986 that was about kids going away to a space camp. And for me, being a Star Wars fan, growing up in the space shuttle era, that was fascinating to me and got me thinking about space and going up and space shuttles. Like it's like the Millennium Falcon of Earth. And I did have those kind of thoughts. And when I remember leaving the theater in 1983 after seeing Return of the Jedi and just looking up into the stars. And, you know, I'm thinking more about Ewoks and TIE Fighters and Darth Vader, but just thinking that, hey, what's out there? What's up there? I absolutely had those thoughts. So Space Camp was one of those movies. And it's, I haven't seen it probably since 1986, to be honest. And I don't know if it holds up in terms of quality, but that got me thinking. And then in conjunction with that, if I may, Brandon, there was a game. I grew up playing the Commodore 64. There was a game called Project Space Station, which is like a NASA related game where you are in control of the shuttle program and you got to do these research projects and you got to launch the shuttle and you got to go to the space station. You got to build a space station, right? And here I am, the Star Wars kid, wanting to play Star Wars games, or maybe I want to be an astronaut. And I was like, oh, my dad got this game for me. So excited. Oh my gosh, action, right? Got to launch a space shuttle. Most of the game is hiring scientists and engineers to and staying within your budget to launch a successful space shuttle program. And I look back now and laugh because I got so into that. I wasn't, you know, my view of astronaut was Luke Skywalker, quite frankly, right? And here I was literally 10 or 11 years old, pouring through a roster of like biochemists and finding the right one for my project. And that game got me thinking a lot about that kind of stuff and what science actually is. And I am fascinated with like the shuttle program from back in the day, tragedies and all. It was something I grew up with, and how even the Apollo missions, and how I love that those launches, which sometimes the space race might just seem like, hey, who's going to get to the moon first and plant a flag. But like, man, like, the technology in those launches, how it trickled down to things in our life, trickled down to everything. You don't even think about it. That always inspired me, that kind of stuff. But I still love hearing those stories.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is so much technology in our day-to-day lives that can be attributed directly to the Apollo space program and stuff that was invented for space that we realized has applications here on Earth. And that's a whole nother incredible rabbit hole to go down. No, I really appreciate you sharing all that, you know, with me, Ken. And it kind of, I can kind of relate it back to myself a little bit, where I think Star Wars was really my first love when it came to films and filmmaking, and kind of just like being in awe of the spectacle of everything. And the Apollo space program, I attribute to what really inspired me to become a mechanical engineer. And I think there is kind of maybe a relationship between getting interested in NASA and the Apollo space program. I used to watch so many documentaries on it when I was in high school, and my love for Star Wars, and obviously Star Wars being very much a galactic, you know, outer space fantasy story. I think that I find it really interesting how we can kind of link back a lot of things in our life to the films that we love.
Look, it's you look at anyone who's like a droid builder. That is a different sect of the Star Wars fandom. That is what you're talking about, where I saw the Star Wars films and started dreaming about writing movies and this, that, and not that you don't or you haven't, but like, I love talking to or hearing from droid builders or the folks that maybe might build costumes, because that's a certain kind of engineering to me too, the cosplay world of just like, I'm fascinated with that and how Star Wars does have, I think, naturally you're going to gravitate towards Star Trek when it comes to science inspiration, but Star Wars got people thinking, and I'm no expert in this field, but you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Brandon, but like just thinking and imagination and dreaming about what could be, it seems to be a lot of what goes into science and building space broccoli. That's kind of it. Star Wars does provide that for a lot of fans.
Yeah, for sure. And I like that you brought up cosplay and all that. I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos about different types of cosplay lately. And it's just, it really is interesting. The more that you dive down into it, there's a lot of engineering involved. There's a lot of manufacturing and engineering design elements and skill sets that people use to build. Like, it could be a R2-D2, remote control R2-D2, anything as complicated as electronically as that, or is like, maybe like a giant General Grievous puppet, and you have to know, okay, like, how am I going to make the head? Is it going to be 3D printed? Am I going to take a, you know, piece of a certain type of plastic or something and take a, you know, a milling machine to it? Or am I going to carve it out of wood? What am I going to do?
Yeah, I love it. You know, I don't want to make it sound like I was a super close friend with him, but I did know Grant Imahara, the late great Grant Imahara, who just had a passion for engineering and science and all those wonderful things. And a lot of people know Grant and were inspired by Grant, but I love the way he saw BB-8 and Force Awakens. I think even before Force Awakens, it was like, oh, awesome. How do I build that? How do I do that? And that's, man, that's just, there you go. That's the inspiration Star Wars provides, other than pew, pew, pew and space wizards, which is big and part of it as well. And life lessons and moral lessons and morality tales and politics lessons. Believe me, that's all there. But Star Wars is this big, wonderful thing that inspired so many different people.
Yeah, that's great. And I didn't know that you knew Grant. So that's really cool. Yeah, he was a super inspiration to myself growing up. And also, I think a great, you know, person to look up to for someone in my career path, who is obviously a mechanical engineer, but loves film and television and trying to dip my feet into both worlds, which is be quite the dance sometimes.
It is quite the dance. He did it well. And like I said, I knew him and I was around him a lot. I don't want to make it sound like I was a super close friend, but we through Matt Key and Brittany Walk and that group. He's the only I played D&D once, and Grant and I were war trolls or war dwarfs together. It was great. And he applied that engineering brain to how we're going to make this work. And it was fun to see and absolutely. And he was proof. And I think it's one of his perhaps lasting legacies among many things that would be considered in his legacy, but just like, yeah, you can do both. You can do science. You can put on that white coat and you can get really nerdy in the lab, but you can also have fun in front of the camera. And you can also love this giant space world and fantasy world and D&D and all those kind of things. It's all kind of the same muscle. It just depends on what you want to focus on.
Definitely. And that's exactly where I'm trying my best to be. So, yeah. Grant was a really great inspiration. And, I do want to ask you one more thing, because we did talk about, you know, kind of like how the engineering and science, a little bit of Star Wars, but and how I know you kind of mentioned that science fiction is more like Star Trek, which I do agree. But is there anything in Star Wars, you ever wonder about like the science specifically in Star Wars? I know you're someone who's really, really great at suspending your disbelief and letting the filmmaker take you on this journey. But like, for fun, do you ever look at a scene in Star Wars and go, I wonder how the science of that would work.
Look, just simply, I don't think you need to look more further, any further than the lightsaber itself, and how it just always fascinated me. And as a kid, you would be like, why can't we have that? But beyond that, I will say this. I was fascinated by Luke and essentially Vader's, but Luke's fake hand, his robot hand, as a kid, because not that I walked around with a great fear of losing my limbs, but, you know, I knew that was a real thing. And I remember just literally daydreaming about how that would work, how that would feel. And would 2-1 be the medical droid poking it, and you see like the little, you know, the hand reacting to the finger. I was really fascinated by that little moment and how that actually would and potentially could work. I didn't have the brain power to make it work or go beyond the detail, but that, as even as a little kid, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I remember that particular scene. And that's why it's so, you know, talk about the little moments of why we love Star Wars, but like the, you know, 2-1B pressing it and Luke's moving his hand and you see the little gears and levers moving. That's some Star Wars science right there for you.
Yeah. I think for me growing up, like most kids, it's the lightsaber, like you mentioned, right? Like, yeah. How can we make a real life lightsaber? Like, not in any way considering how dangerous it would be to actually have a lightsaber. Yeah. But just like, I want to get my hands on a real lightsaber. How do I do it? The same thing I feel like with like the proton pack in Ghostbusters, like, right. No one should ever have one of those. But as a kid, you're like, I want one. I want to catch Ghost.
Yeah.
Like, let's do it.
Hey, absolutely. You don't think about the evils of a lightsaber. You don't think about it. You just want it.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I've dived into the physics of Star Wars a little bit on this channel years ago. And one of the things that I covered was how long could you survive in space without a spacesuit? You know, for me personally, when you go back to The Last Jedi, we have that scene that many people are divided on of Princess Leia in space, surviving the blast, using the Force, all that stuff that I think is great and I personally loved. And as a defender of it, I wanted to prove like how she could have survived in space for as long as she did without a spacesuit. I know she could have. And I was able to kind of like, you know, piece it all together and come up with like a lot of really cool information that I didn't know before, to the point where if I'm ever in space, I'm like, I think I can survive in space for like maybe a minute.
Just enough to enjoy the view before you check out. Oh, that's fascinating. I'll go back and check that out, Brandon, because I love when people look at Star Wars like that. I never, you know, the Last Jedi debate of those bombs that were dropped and there's no gravity. And then Pablo Hidalgo had already put out like, no, there's the ships create their own gravity, blah, blah, blah. And I think you can sometimes use science to tear away the joy of Star Wars. And that's where sometimes I might fight against it. But what you're saying is just equally as inspiring and equally as fun about seeing something on screen in Star Wars and just going, how would that work? And the people behind it often do have those thoughts in their head when they're putting them into the story.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's another great scene where the science, I think, supports it, but it also has to lean into the fiction element a little bit. Like, okay, like we're working with the fact that these ships create their own gravity, something we can't do now, but in Star Wars, they can do it. We'll accept that they have the technology. Like, yeah, those bombs would continue to fall after leaving the ship because there's nothing to change their inertia. There's nothing to change their direction or the speed at which they're traveling and all that stuff. And it's I think it's fun to use science to kind of like defend things that you see in the films a little bit, you know, but
just explore it.
Just to explore, because I think I feel like I do a pretty good job of suspending my disbelief, but me personally, I just think it's fun every once in a while to explore the science of things. And I think it also like helps get people talking about science. It's hard to go up to someone, you know, and be like, hey, you want to talk science with me? And the general person is probably gonna be like, no. But like, not today.
Even when you asked me on the show, I'm like, does Brandon know I'm completely dumb? All right, let's figure this out. But yeah, I get you.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're dumb. I think you're a perfect guest for the show, Ken.
Perfect.
But you know, But where I'm going with this is, but if you ask them, hey, do you want to talk Star Wars with me? And then it's like, okay, maybe more inclined to say, yes, do you want to talk movies with me? Everyone loves movies and filmmaking. And then when you can kind of tie science into the films that we love, there's a good conversation to be had. And that's ultimately, you know what I'm trying to do. And then when the science supports where you fall in the fandom a little bit, it always kind of like makes you feel a little better too.
Hey, I love it. I'm a big fan of Douglas Adams and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So when like iPads and iPhones started popping up, I'm like, oh yeah, you mean the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this little electronic device with all the answers? Yeah, I've been reading about that since I was a kid. So there's science in our narrative fiction, absolutely, and it's inspiring when you dig into it.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. But you know, I think it's about time that we wrap things up here. Those are all the questions I have for you here today, Ken, and I appreciate you taking the time to answer them. It was definitely more than 5 minutes, but
hey, you know, it's a good title. That's all you know.
It depends. Are we talking about 5 Earth minutes, 5 Martian minutes, 5 minutes on Venus? You know, it's all relative.
We're on exegol time from Rise of Skywalker. That's the time we're on.
Perfect. Exegol is pretty cool. Is that a Rise of Skywalker poster right behind you? Is that shot from Exegol? I think that
it is from the Battle of Exegol. This was the premiere. The premiere poster they gave it. Yeah, so it's essentially the Battle of Exegol. Yeah, and that's Endor and Krayt up there.
There you have it. We've come full circle.
Yeah.
But I really, really appreciate you being on the show here today, Ken. I think you brought a lot of great insight to the two articles that we covered. I really enjoyed our special segment of just kind of like talking, learning more about you, the stories that you shared about, you know, growing up and your relationship, the positive experiences with teachers or like as a baseball coach. And, you know, obviously sharing some personal stories about Grant and Mahara. I think, thank you so much for sharing all that with us here today. I really appreciate that.
Absolute pleasure to be here, my friend.
It is an absolute pleasure to have you here. If the good people watching want to find you when this show is all over, where can they find you online? And please plug anything and everything you need to plug.
I absolutely will. You mentioned the good people. So over at the Good People Association, we have our Kickstarter going strong here, about under a month left on Futility, the actual game of living. It is a board game that is really fun. It's like those raunchy card games meet some of those classic games you played as a kid that, try to navigate life. And we got the Kickstarter going. You can support. Just go to Kickstarter and search for Futility, the actual game of living, and help then we'll I think the science of my camera started to flip around there. Just go there. You can link to a lot of things I do, like Saturday Night Knapsack and my new radio show Pop Rock and Radio on Mixcloud.
All right, I think you cut out there for a moment, Ken. I hope everyone watching was able to catch what you said. And as I'm saying this now, you're freezing here once again. So let's see if we can maybe wait this out and you could say your plugs all over again.
Here, hold on. What about now? I'm trying to
you
switch
sound
to...
good now. Almost made it all the way through the show without any technical difficulties. I hope this isn't just on my end. I don't think so.
Okay. Now what? Can you hear me now?
Okay. Now I can see and hear you.
Okay. You know, I have multiple networks in this house, Brandon, and the science of internet networks, it just suddenly switched to the one in the front living room. So, if you want me to just do it all again?
Sure. Just do it all again. Why not?
Do it all again. Hey, here we are. This is, we'll do it live. Hey, you can follow me by going to Ken Knapsack or kennapsack.com. Get information on all the shows I do, like Saturday Night Knapsack, my new show, Pop Rock and Radio on Mixcloud. And just in case it cut out earlier here, we, the Good People Association, have our Kickstarter going for Futility, the actual game of living, the board game we've created. We're trying to get out to the world, so you can just go to Kickstarter and search Futility, the actual game of living. It's kind of like those raunchy card games meets the board games from your past where you try to navigate through life. So it's a lot of fun, and a lot of people supporting it. We're really humbled by that, but we're close to our goal, so just search for Futility on Kickstarter, and there you go.
All right, there you go, guys. Support Ken and all his endeavors. Go support Futility, the actual game of living. Check that all out. Ken does a lot of great things. I love particularly listening to you on the Force Center podcast. I love your takes on Star Wars. And every once in a while when I can tune into the Good People Association, you guys do great work over there as well.
Thank you, my friend. Yeah, Force Center as well. Forgot. You're doing a better job plugging my work than I am, my friend.
No, I thought that you had already mentioned it. So I just kind of lucked out there.
No, you're perfect.
Yeah. And I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. Obviously, if you're watching right now on YouTube, you've already found my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/BrandonHanna. But maybe you're listening on audio platform and you don't know that and you want to check out the video components. So go right ahead, subscribe, hit that little notification bell so you don't miss a thing. And maybe it's the reverse. Maybe you're watching on YouTube and you don't know that there's an audio version of this show on basically anywhere podcasts are sold. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. Links are in the description down below. Please guys, follow the show on audio platform if you can. And, leave a positive review. And you know, if you want to leave a lukewarm review, I'll accept that too. It's better than nothing. But thank you guys all for watching here today. Thank you once again to Ken for being on the show. It was super great to have you. And as always, guys, thank you for taking time out of your day.